This morning's reading is one that I would put in the category, the best of what we know. It's by Ron Heifetz, son of the violinist Yasha Heifetz. Ron and his colleagues at the Kennedy School at Harvard are, for me, an essential resource about the best of what we learn about how organizations come to terms with change and do so in healthy ways. On previous Sundays, I've referred to Heifetz's distinction between reactive space and balcony space, between taking action and taking perspective. I've also referred to his distinction between technical problems and adaptive challenges. Technical problems have low complexity, low conflict, clearly defined solutions. But adaptive challenges are messier, and usually they require folks to learn new ways of being together. The reading today asks the question, what might we expect to happen amidst adaptive work? So this is from Heifetz's book on adaptive leadership. Adaptive leadership is mobilizing people to tackle tough challenges and to thrive. The word thriving applies to evolutionary biology, and it has three characteristics. Thriving, number one, preserves the DNA that is essential for the species' health. Number two, it discards or re-regulates or rearranges the DNA that may have functioned well in the past, but no longer serves well. And number three, it creates new arrangements that allow the system to flourish in ways that will be more helpful going forward. Successful adaptations thus enable a system to take the best from its history into the future. And we will be having a workshop on that on Saturday, January 30th, by the way. What do these challenges suggest for adaptive leadership? First of all, it's about enabling processes that foster thriving. Secondly, adaptive changes build on the past rather than jettisoning the past. 98% of our human DNA is identical to that of a chimpanzee. It took less than 2% of our inherited genetic blueprint to give extraordinary range and ability. So the challenge for adaptive leadership is distinguishing between what is essential to preserve and what has served its time and may be expendable. Thus, adaptive work is both conservative and progressive. It is both. Adaptation occurs through experimentation. Leaders need an experimental mindset, improvising as they go, buying time, buying resources for the next experiment. And adaptation relies on diversity. In evolutionary biology, nature acts sort of like a fund manager in the world of finance. That is, it diversifies risk. Each variant is a new experiment, producing a new form with capacities somewhat different from the rest of the population. So the secret is variation. In organizational terms, this might be called distributed or collective intelligence. Adaptive leadership thus values diverse views from many stakeholders, from new stakeholders, and it relies much less on central planning from a few at the top. I might add that includes us ministers. These are some opening lines from a poem entitled Flying Crooked by Robert Graves. The butterfly, a cabbage white, his honest idiocy of flight, will never now, it is too late, master the art of flying straight, yet has, who knows as well as I, a just sense of how not to fly. Once upon a time, it was on a Thanksgiving day in 1959, my world came undone amidst the honest idiocy of flight. My dad gathered our family in the living room after dinner, brought us the news. He had just received a dream of a job offer. He was going to be among the founding faculty members at Florida Presbyterian College, far away. And Dad knew the implications for the family. What might it be like to uproot from our Texas home and begin anew in Florida? I lay awake at night in fear and trembling. How could I leave familiar landscapes and friendships? After several weeks of dinnertime conversations, Dad offered me three options. Option one, I could move to Florida with the family, transfer to a new high school, and finish my senior year there. Option two, I could move to Florida, but skip my senior year of high school and be one of the founding class of freshmen at Dad's new college. Quite an honor. And option number three, I could remain in Texas to finish my senior year, and Dad would arrange a congenial place for me to live, apart from the family. And thus the doorways opened toward options that I had never imagined, leading me far from this little backwater town in North Texas. How would I come to terms with change? And so today we consider the dance of change. And I've already suggested a couple of key ideas. Number one, it's not change that people resist, it's loss. I am not who I was. We are not who we were. It's loss. And number two, in every living system, every organization, successfully coming to change is both conservative and progressive. A system preserves the DNA that is essential for continuing health and well-being and thriving, and adaptation discards or rearranges that which no longer allows the system to flourish in new environments. There's just one problem. None of us likes to be rearranged. Of course not. But I've got good news for you. The good news is that this is going to be a short sermon. We're going to wrap up at about 12:05 or 12:06, and that's going to be plenty of time, because all we need is one illustration and a few comments. Today, I've referred to a PZD, a productive zone of disequilibrium. What the heck is that? Let's have a look at the cartoon. Okay, this is basically an energy diagram. On the vertical axis is energy, anxiety, intensity, motivation. There are a lot of different words you can use. Or disequilibrium, discomfort. And this kind of diagram, which I borrowed from Ron Heifetz, is for every organization in the midst of transition. And then on the horizontal axis is time going forward. Look just at the red line, the red curve on the left side of the diagram. This red line shows how a system's energy or anxiety or discomfort might change over time amidst a technical problem. Example, you're downhill skiing. You fall and break your leg. You're lying in the snow, frozen, in pain. Other people are skiing past you. In a while, the ski patrol comes by. They have a stretcher, a blanket, some sympathy, maybe a shot of whiskey if you want it. Disequilibrium is already starting to drop because, aha, somebody's going to carry me out of here. Now, your anxiety may go up a little bit when you're in the emergency room and waiting for a physician, and it may go up a little bit during your weeks or months of rehab therapy, but overall, your distress is going to vanish in this technical situation. Now look at the yellow line, the yellow curve. And this is the one that applies mostly to situations in congregations. These are adaptive challenges, and these follow a much different pattern. Here the discomfort starts at a fairly low level. Many in the system might say, okay, we're doing well. We don't need anything. The challenge is to raise the system's awareness to a point where productive work can be done. There is a range above which the system can go into panic or shutdown if the intensity is too much, and there is a minimum level below which there can be snoozing and work avoidance. And work avoidance, of course, can take many forms. One of my favorite is appointing a committee that has no funds, no authority, and really doesn't end up doing much. There are lots of these. Okay, now here's what is intriguing. In a congregation like this, how might these productive zones be located? Well, is there just one for the congregation? In my experience, every subsystem, every committee, every volunteer team has its own zone within which useful work can be done. Not only that, it gets even messier. Each of these zones shifts. These are not static, and this is what requires the wise discernment of those in the groups and of leaders. Where is the zone where challenge is leading to productive work? You know, in the words of Margaret Wheatley, it is impossible to direct a living system. You can perturb it, but you can't direct it. And this is because living systems already contain their own solutions. The trick is to, within those systems, unlock what is already there and have the system re-recognize what is already its capability. And so here's the challenge as you and I engage the dance of change. Do you and I want to function principally as quality control inspectors, looking for what seems not quite right and trying to fix it? Or do we want to be encouragers, energizers, cheerleaders? Friends, of this much, I really am convinced, and I'm going to wrap up in about 3 minutes. Identifying strengths and building upon them is not an avoidance of reality. In fact, it's the best way to improve upon reality. Organizations are like Kansas sunflowers. They turn toward the light, toward sources of energy, toward sources of encouragement. You can do it. You can do it. I mean, we all know this from our experience. Think of the organizations where you have felt most meaningfully connected and contributing. I have a hunch that these are the groups where you have heard the message, you are valued, you make a difference. That's what Kansas sunflowers do. You know, Anne Lamott writes this: gorgeous, amazing things come into our lives when we are paying attention. Mangoes, grandnieces, Bach, ponds. This happens more often when we have as little expectation as possible. If you say, well, that's pretty much what I thought I'd see, you are in trouble. At that point, you might ask yourself, why are you even here? Astonishing material and revelation appear in our lives all the time, and so let it be. For unto us much is given, so much is given. We just have to be open for business. End of quote, Anne Lamott. And so, friends, this is our challenge here, that we have as little expectation as possible as we enter into this adaptive work. For to us so much has truly been given. We just have to be open for business.